Welcome to session 5 of the Motivate Your Child Action Plan audio series. It's in this session we talk about firmness. Now, this is always interesting because this seems to be the session that parents are often waiting for. In fact, they want to know more consequences, things they can do to their kids. And so they're eager to be a part of this session. They want to hear some ideas of more techniques, strategies they can use to be firm with their children.
And of course, we have to start by saying that firmness is not only consequences. There's a lot of ways to be firm with our children and to set some standards and guidelines for them without consequences. So we want to talk about what firmness is, how we can use it in our parenting as part of the plan. It can't be the only plan, but it is a piece of a plan as we're helping our children to move forward.
Firmness sets the structure for kids that says, this is the way we're going. No, you can't do that. It draws a line for children so that they know where the lines are. And the lines are very important for a child's heart. You see, inside of a child's heart, the Lord is developing a determination of what is right and wrong. Teenagers find themselves particularly in this area where they're trying to evaluate ethical dilemmas and the intricacies of right and wrong. But it's true for any age child that they're looking for right and wrong and what that means in any particular situation. Firmness draws a line in the heart that says, this is right and this is wrong. It could be as simple as how we leave the kitchen table after a meal's over. That when you leave the table, the right way to do it is you take your plate and cup and silverware and put it on the counter, or you load the dishwasher, or everybody works together to unload the table, empty the dishwasher, whatever it is. So all of that becomes the structure that children need. Firmness is important because it outlines that structure inside the child's heart.
And of course, structure is very important in family life. We have to keep things moving. And if we're communicating in a particular way to children, this is how we do things, of course, there's going to be some flexibility from time to time. But basically, we're making life predictable, and we're communicating that there's a right way and a wrong way. And that can pertain to how we do things like clearing the table or how we handle conflict in relationships, how we handle disappointment. There's a right way and a wrong way. And that's what we're teaching our children through firmness.
I think that kids need firmness because it not only draws the lines inside their hearts of what is right and what is wrong when parents set limits and guidelines, but it also helps children develop a contentment to live within those limits. Now, some children always want to go outside the boundaries. And we're trying to work with them in order to help them. But the internal motivation that's developed in a child's heart is when they develop the internal guidelines or the convictions that set those limits for them. So any way that we can use firmness to build internal motivation will prompt children in the right direction.
You see, firmness can help a child to develop the character they need. In fact, sometimes we'll say that firmness develops character. It says that you have to go a particular way. This is how we're going to respond. Sometimes firmness makes life uncomfortable. It makes life difficult. But it's in those difficult situations when children can move forward, be successful, that the character and the new patterns are developed. So the firmness becomes a very important key to developing character.
Now, when we take firmness and place it on the map, we put firmness at point A. Point A is trying to help children feel uncomfortable about being at point A. We want children to say to themselves, this isn't working for me. I've got to do something different. So by creating some challenges or some firmness at point A, children start to rethink the way that they're operating, their operating principles. So the child who argues whenever you give them an instruction, if the parent decides that they're going to take some action, it might not be a consequence. It might just be setting some guidelines that say, well, you've crossed the line. Just setting some indicator that says, I'm not going there with you on this path that you're trying to take. What you're doing is wrong. And what that does is it doesn't work for the child then. A lot of the things children continue to do, they do because it works for them. And what we're saying is let's make it not work for them. Let's set up some ways that stop the process from being productive for them so the kids are saying, you know, this isn't working. I need to try something different.
So as we think about a plan moving a child from point A to point B is developing some character in their life. Point A is where they are now, a problem area. We apply firmness at point A to make Fern, that point A, uncomfortable. Often children are very happy to stay at point A. They don't believe they have a problem. They don't mind that they are disrespectful or react severely to an annoying sibling. They don't mind being sloppy, messy, irresponsible with homework. Those are point A issues, and firmness makes point A uncomfortable. It says you can't live this way, that it's not going to work for you. And so sometimes we have to apply that firmness at point A to get the child moving toward point B.
Now, some parents think firmness is the only tool we use to move children along the path. That's unfortunate because there are several other tools or components of a good plan. We'll talk about those, each one of those components, in subsequent lessons. However, in this session, we want to talk about the role of firmness, what it does, and how to do it effectively. Because if we can help you use firmness, then children start to make some changes. But we rarely use firmness on its own. We try to put it together with other components to make things work more effectively.
It doesn't do as much good just to make point A uncomfortable without some direction. Where do we go from here? So firmness is not just a consequence and leave it at that, but the consequence is used in context of moving the child toward point B. In fact, this is one of the things that make MAP mentality distinct from other kinds of discipline that we would call maybe a justice mentality, is that the consequence is not just given for a crime committed, but the consequence is given to motivate change, to move the child forward. So when we use a consequence like taking away a privilege, for example, we're not going to take it away for a set period of time, but we'll have the child earn that privilege back by changing some behaviors and some attitudes and ways of reacting. So we'll say, okay, you're not going to have that computer time today, and maybe not tomorrow. Let's see how you can respond to instructions, what kind of attitude you can demonstrate around the family, and then we can talk about computer time again. So when we're taking away a privilege, we want to tie it into something they're working on in their life.
One child had a problem yelling at her dad. It was a problem. She was 12 years old. And when she didn't get her way, she would stomp off, yell. And dad had tried to work on it in a number of different ways, but it wasn't working. So dad, at one point, after his daughter had yelled at him, said, okay, here's what we're going to do. You need to come and talk to me about it. Not yell at me. We need to go and talk about what happened and try to work on it. If you're unwilling to talk to me about it, then I'm going to have to take away a privilege from you. And so he said, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to let you think about it. This was an important part because time's always important in the discipline process. He says, think about it. I'm going to come back in 15 minutes. If you're unwilling to work with me, then I'm going to take away your electronics from your room, your cell phone, your iPod, and your radio. And came back 15 minutes later. She was unresponsive. So he says, okay, we're going to take those three things away. Came back 15 minutes later and said, you ready to talk to me? No, I'm not ready to talk to you, she said. So he said, oh, here's what we're going to do. You're going to lose the privilege of working with your pet rabbit. If you don't work with me here, then you're not going to be able to work with the rabbit or be around the rabbit for a period of time. Waited 15 minutes. She wasn't willing. So he says, okay, you lose that privilege. He says, I'm going to add one more. I'm going to take the door off your bedroom. If you're not going to respond to me, then I'm going to take the door off your bedroom. And he gave her 15 more minutes. She didn't respond. So he took the door off the bedroom. And he stopped there. Now, some parents would escalate consequences forever until they've removed everything from the room or they've grounded the child for a year. That's not what we're saying here. But those three things made the child uncomfortable, but she was still unwilling to change. So he said this, okay, those are the only consequences I'm taking away, the only privileges I'm taking away from you, but you can't have any of them back until you're ready to talk to me. A couple hours later, she came back to her dad and said, I'm ready. Okay, well, let's sit down and talk about it. I want my stuff back. Well, first we need to talk about it. If we talk about it together and we're able to talk about it without yelling, you can choose one of the things to have back. So they dialogued about it. It worked well. She chose one of those things to get back. She wanted her door back on her bedroom. It wasn't long, he says to her, before you can have another one back as long as you're able to work on this and work on contributing to the family and trying to help out and build relationships. Well, if you do well, then tomorrow you can choose another one to get back. And so each day she got another one back because she was responsive to her dad. Now, the way he used firmness in that situation was to make her life uncomfortable. That's what consequences do. So she was willing to change the process. He set out the target, the goal of what he wanted. He wanted some dialogue without yelling. And he told his daughter that he was helping her develop that. She's on a trajectory to develop more cooperation in dialogue instead of yelling. And the consequences work because they made her feel uncomfortable. That's the idea here that we're trying to work on with firmness. In that case, Dad positioned himself really well. He said, hey, I'd love to give you back your privileges. You can have them all back. Work with me and you can have them back. He had transferred responsibility to his daughter for getting things back together, and then they could work on things together. And when they did, then she could have those privileges back. That's what we're talking about when we come to firmness. We want to do it in a way that's motivating children in the direction that they need to go.
I think that story illustrates an important fact about firmness here is the attitude of the parent in the process. The parent needs to not be angry in the process, giving a consequence, should not be trying to make the child feel uncomfortable in a sense that, ha, I got you now. But it's, hey, come on, let's change. You need some motivation to change. Okay, we'll provide the motivation. But the goal here is change. And I want to talk this through and I want to help you have a different perspective. So as a parent, we want to try to use consequences in a way where we're still having an attitude of encouragement with the child. And that can be a challenge, I think, for parents, a growing edge for parents. But thinking about consequences in that way, it's not just a sentence for a crime that's been committed, but it's a motivation to change. How can I motivate my child to make some changes? Well, we may have to take away some privileges, or we may have to require some extra work and things like that in order to help that change process get start rolling.
I think it's important to talk about that issue of anger, Joanne, for a minute. This whole idea of harshness, I think parents misunderstand. In fact, I think that some parents think firmness and harshness are part of the same action. And I think that the harshness can be separated from firmness if we think about it and try to dissect it a bit. I don't think you have to have harshness in order to be firm.
And I think sometimes that a different way of thinking for parents, sometimes they imagine that being firm means being harsh, and it goes along with yelling and intensity in the voice. But if we can learn to separate those two things out, yes, we're going to be firm, we're going to make some limits, we're going to maybe give some consequences, but to do it with an even temper, to do it without getting loud or intense with a child, that may take some practice on the part of the parent. That's okay. We're all learning and growing. We've got new skills that we need to develop in family life. And this may be one for you as a parent to learn to separate out harshness from firmness. You see, part of the problem with harshness is it creates discouragement in the child. It builds walls between the parent and child, distance in the family, and that's not what we want. We want to stay on the same team, coaching our children along. And so learning how to use firmness in a way that still maintains a coach attitude can be a growing edge for us.
Harshness pours emotional intensity into the situation. It's often not needed. Kids don't need emotion. What they need is firmness. Consequences draw a line in the sand that say, here's what's going to happen if you don't change. And they prompt children to make the change. Emotions, then added to that whole picture, generate conflict, and they move a child into a place where now we're addressing this on an emotional level. Now, granted, some kids want to generate a lot of emotion in the midst of the discipline process, but that doesn't mean that parents have to enter in. Kids often don't like to be angry alone. They want company. And so they're sending out invitations to their anger party. Parents don't have to join in. They can pull back. They can issue their consequences and their directives calmly, and children will need to respond to those. So be thinking in terms of pulling back some of the emotion in order to make your consequences more effective and address children on a heart level.
Now, sometimes parents feel like if they take the emotion out, then they're being uncaring, they're being distant, and that's not necessary. We still want to provide empathy for the child, maybe a sadness. Hey, I'm sorry you're making these choices. That's disappointing for all of us. And so staying connected emotionally is important, but the anger is a problem because the anger can escalate and it can increase the child's anger as well. And then the parent gets more angry and it just can get out of hand too quickly. So as parents, we want to really keep our own emotion in check, provide that empathy, offer some sadness for the situation, but keep the anger out of the picture.
I think some parents must believe that their consequences aren't enough, that that's not going to change, that kids need to be yelled at somehow in order to make the change. And maybe they've seen it work in the past. I do think yelling works in that it gets kids in the car, gets kids to be quiet at times. The problem is that, it, as you said earlier, Joanna, damages relationships. So I think it's important for us to look for ways to motivate our children forward. We want to build internal motivation, but if a child's not responding to that internal motivation, then an external motivation tied into internal motivation works. For example, we might use the consequence, but we're talking about moving in a different direction and building the heart quality or the character quality necessary to move forward. So we're using external motivation or a consequence to build internal motivation in that child.
And so we have to look at the interaction that we have with the child. Are we helping that child to become more independent in the process? I think sometimes our anger and our yelling at our kids move children in the other direction. So they're just responding out of fear of some kind of consequence, but they're not really internally motivated. And this starts with teaching children to follow instructions and respond to our words, having a tight action point so that we don't have to use that intensity to get their attention. I think even of a young child, we're getting them into the car seat and they're fighting us all along the way. Firmness means they're getting in the car seat. Whether they're happy about it or not, they're getting in the car seat. But then we can talk about there's an easy way and a hard way to do this. If you cooperate, it's easier. So the way we're talking to our children can move them towards some more internal motivation over time. But as parents, we're going to make it happen. That firmness is important.
You don't have to have a consequence in order to be firm. Sometimes you're just saying, this is how we're going to do it, or the answer is no, or I'm not dialoguing with you about this anymore. Just our response sometimes, minus the emotion, but a firm response is what directs children in the other direction. So looking for ways to be firm is very helpful as we're trying to move children from point A to point B.
And I think that structure that it provides then leads to a greater character in the child's heart, self-control that they need. Because that structure has been provided for them initially, they will move more towards structure over time as well, knowing this is the way we do things. This is the routine that we have. This is how we follow instructions. This is how we report back after the job's been done. This is how we respond to correction and we move forward. So having those routines in family life are another important way to demonstrate firmness in a child's life.
Now, so far we've talked about firmness as directed by the parent, but sometimes life offers its own firmness. And parents need to know how to be responsive to that and available to work with a child when life corrects the child. For example, a teenager who wants to wear his shorts to church in the snowy day, you might allow him to do that. Life's going to teach him a lesson. There's some things we don't need to teach him ourselves. We can say, okay, hey, you want to wear your shorts? That's your business. Wear your shorts to church on that day. And he might be freezing cold. Learn the hard way that, you know, probably not a good idea on a freezing cold day to wear shorts. Life has just dished out a very important lesson of firmness. Life is often very unforgiving. And we can help our kids to know how to respond better to life situations by coaching them along in the process. In order to do that, though, we need to ally ourselves with the child and not the consequence. Instead of saying, see, I told you so, or if you would have listened to me, this wouldn't have happened, we need to empathize with the child and say, wow, I bet you're cold. Or, oh, wow, playing rough with the cat. That cat sure can scratch, can't she? And so we're empathizing with the child, and we're drawing attention to the pain the child's experiencing and trying to redirect that in a way that shows empathy, but point the child in the right direction. Don't need a lecture. Sometimes life teaches its own lessons, and the firmness that takes place in life is a good way for us to train our child. It happens. Kids get bad grades. That's a problem in life. Child starts to work in a job and loses something, and that's life. Or a child is trying to be organized with his schoolwork and forgets something. Those are very important lessons. Now, we have to step alongside of our child and help them be successful at times, but we don't have to take the role of firmness because life's already being firm. And we're coming along and setting up structures maybe to help the child be more successful in response to those challenges life is throwing at them.
Using natural consequences or taking advantage of natural consequences in a child's life can be a very helpful tool, but I think sometimes it raises some questions for parents. When do I allow natural consequences to take effect, and when do I help my child out? You know, if your child forgets to take his lunch to school, do you bring him a lunch or do you let him be hungry all day and learn his lesson? And I think those are important questions that we need to be asking, but it brings us back to our plan from point A to point B, because we believe the answer to that question depends on what you're working on in that child's life. It depends on what is point B, where are we headed? Are we trying to teach responsibility? Are we trying to teach more thoughtfulness, being aware of what you need and being ready to take action, those sorts of things? Well, then we may allow the child to experience the natural consequences of forgetting the lunch. But if we're trying to teach that in the family, we all help each other out, we work together as a team, I'm here for you, I expect you to be here for me, these sorts of things, then we may take that lunch to school for the child because that's what we're working on in the child's life. So it's not always right or wrong to use the natural consequences, but it needs to be part of the bigger plan. Keeping in mind the plan from point A to point B, and then using consequences strategically as part of the plan.
Now, as we look at that idea of life teaching our children lessons, we have to come to this question about crises that take place in our child's life. Sometimes a big consequence comes in. A child gets a failing grade on a test, or some problem happens with a window breaks at the neighbor's house because they're throwing the ball around and some bad thing happens. Or they're mean to a child and the child ends up having the parent come over and want to talk to the child. All of those are crises. Now, how we handle a crisis is very important because the crisis that takes place in that child's life is an opportunity for some change to take place. Remember, in a crisis, you get a good conversation and you get to change the rules. Two important things that happen in a crisis. So changing the rules might be, hey, look, we're going to tighten up here. You're going to have to check in more often, or we're not going to be using those video games anymore, or we're going to require some counseling, or you're going to need to make this a part of your schedule, going to youth group, or whatever it might be. We can change things around, but we're not going to have you playing with that friend anymore. That's changing the rules. The other thing is we get a good conversation, so don't waste it yelling at your child because he embarrassed you and because of his actions and the crisis has put a blemish on the family. Rather, you just want to talk about what life lesson we can learn from this. What's important here? That conversation is a real important one, so don't waste it by yelling at your child, but take some time to think through how you're going to present that crisis or that response to a crisis in your child's life. Crises come. You're going to have them as a parent. You just want to prepare for them in advance so you're not surprised. When the crisis comes, it's always a learning opportunity, an opportunity to change the rules a little bit in your home, an opportunity to have a significant conversation. So prepare now for the next crisis you might have in family life.
And sometimes that means that when the crisis comes, you need to take a few minutes to think this through. Think through your response to the crisis so that you can take full advantage of it. So you can take advantage of that one conversation and take advantage of the ability to change the rules. So recognize that crises happen in family life. Kids do things that surprise us, catch us off guard. Bad things happen. But we want to be ready with a response that says, okay, we need to think about this and take advantage of it and use it. We may not have asked for this crisis, but we can use it to help the child to move forward.
And then occasionally, as parents, we create a crisis. That is, we say to a child, I'm sorry, we're not going to live this way anymore. No, we're not going to have a sleepover over here at our house because we don't want sleepovers. We don't think they're valuable or helpful, and people get hurt in sleepovers or bad things happen. So the answer is no. And that creates a major crisis for this child who had expectations that she would be able to have a sleepover. And so we create a crisis. And when we create a crisis, sometimes it is an opportunity for teaching. Children get upset. We can't be afraid of our firmness or to enact firmness with children just because they'll get upset. Kids are not going to like some of the firmness that we dish out to them. But we want to dish it out in a way that's not being mean or harsh. It's presenting the facts, the realities, that this is where we're going, this is what we are going to do, this is what we're not going to do, And it may be a crisis for you, but you need to get over it because we're not going that direction. The answer is no. That's really tough for some kids to grasp. And they react to that with anger and they're upset. And we can coach them through that. The key to avoiding the bitterness in a child's heart is to try to build relationship, to try to move forward, to not use harshness yourself, but to recognize that, you know, we need to set some limits. We're not going to continue on like this because we know this is counterproductive for this child's health and well-being.
So that firmness is a very important part of the plan, but it, again, as we have said, it's not the only part of the plan. The relationship building has to cover over the whole plan. And we're working on relationship. Sometimes the firmness takes its toll on relationship. And so we're looking for other opportunities to build relationship back into the process because relationship needs to continue on even in the midst of some firmness that's not received too well. Those situations will pass. The relationship needs to continue on. So we're looking for ways to build relationship even as we're using firmness.
Firmness is a challenge. I find that parents often go from one extreme to the other. On the one hand, they are too firm with their kids. And in that firmness, they're just too controlling. And it creates problems in the relationship. And they're always going to firmness to solve problems. They're not looking at some of the other tools. Whenever they're working with their child and the child's not doing the right thing, their response is, if you don't cut it out, I'm going to. And they're already at consequences. I think a lot of parents move to consequences too quickly. There are other solutions in the process besides consequences. Firmness is important, but it's not the only tool. The other extreme is when parents don't use firmness for the sake of relationship. And it is true that sometimes in parenting we do try to emphasize relationship and may cut back on some firmness. But the challenge is if we cut back too often or too much, then children develop some negative qualities in their lives. We want children to develop character, and character is developed in the midst of firmness. Romans chapter 5, verses 3 and 4 give us an indication of how character is developed. It says their suffering produces perseverance, perseverance character, and character hope. The only one of those qualities that you can change is the perseverance. Perseverance is the only one of those four things that you have control over, and that perseverance is the plan. We want children to have a plan. Sometimes we're going to put pressure on them in the form of suffering in order to be able to work their plan because we know that when they work their plan properly, good character will result, and that character will help them to be able to move forward successfully. So work with your children in order to develop the firmness, and good things can happen. When you are helping children to change, keep in mind we're trying to develop internal motivation. Consequences are external. Internal motivation, though, develops sometimes when we use a consequence because a child says, I'm not going to live this way anymore. And that is what we're looking for. When a child says, this isn't working for me, I've got to try something different, now we're appealing to that internal motivation. The child is going to make some internal adjustments, and we're going to help the child to move forward in a positive direction. So don't just think in terms of external motivation, that is a consequence you might use, but think about firmness in terms of where we're going and why we want to get there. That's going to lead us into the next session, of course, when we talk about visioning, and then on and on as we go through the different components of a good plan. Be watching for different ideas to tie into this idea of firmness, because putting them all together is what makes the strongest kind of plan. God is moving.